We start hour number three. Welcome to the jungle. I am Jim Rome. Quick reset, and I mean that literally. A quick reset, reboot. Pull it together. Let's make sure we go into the weekend strongly. We're coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can. I don't want to be inconsistent with my message. So when this thing starts to kind of veer off or go sideways or come off the rails, I mean, who's to blame here? I can blame it on you, except I'm the host of the show. It all happened under my watch. Everything that happens on this show happens under my watch. I have to own that. So I will. That said, let's have a good, strong third hour. Let's end the week on the right note. Telephone number is toll-free, 1-800-636-8686. Phone calls coming up a little bit later on, but we start this hour by having a conversation with a tight end for the Las Vegas Raiders. He is a Pro Bowler. He had an enormous season. 107 receptions, nearly 1,200 yards, 9 touchdowns, second straight season with 90 receptions and more than 1,100 yards. He is the co-host of the Comeback Stories podcast. He is the founder of the Darren Waller Foundation. He was the 204th pick overall out of Georgia Tech. Darren Waller is my guest. Darren, it's great to have you on the show. How are you?
I'm doing good, Jim. How are you doing?
Good, good. It's good to visit with you. In fact, you're coming off a monster season. You just launched a podcast. You're working with your foundation. You're making moves in the music industry. So what was the start of the off season like for you?
The start of the off season was great for me. It was a chance for me to rest physically, but it gave me an opportunity to tap into, you know, the other passions and other projects that, you know, I like to be involved in. And Donnie and I had talked about doing a podcast amidst our conversations during the season because he's my mental coach as well. And we wanted to pursue that and began to, you know, put some strategy together and go after that. And, you know, I'm still going after my music and stuff like that and working out foundation activities. So it was I've still been really busy ever since the season ended.
Darren Waller joining us. I like that. So tell me again, reset me, Darren. Who is your mental coach and what does a mental coach do for you?
So my mental coach, his name is Donnie Starkins. He's located in Scottsdale, Arizona. So for me, he helps walk me through not only my mental process going to the field, but also through life. And, you know, he just helps provide honesty in all situations of my life to, you know, for me to not go into any situation with fear or uncertainty or trying to perform, but it's all about, you know, just being in love with the process of things and finding meaning in my life, regardless of the results. Because if I live a life of meaning and purpose, the results of my life will take care of themselves.
I think that is so powerful. We could do hours on that alone, but I appreciate that response. Darren Waller is joining us. You know, in terms of the season, and I want to get into some of these things off the field in a minute, but in terms of the season, again, it was remarkable in the sense that you ended the year with 4 100-yard games in your final 5 games. You had that 13-reception, 200-yard game against the Jets. The season overall may not have ended the way you would have liked, but as you look back on that season, what kind of thoughts do you have?
I look back and see you know, the training and the time that I put in paying off, because you always want to, as time goes along and as things, you know, get tougher and more adversity comes, you want to keep getting better despite that. And I felt like my play continued to improve throughout the season. You know, still not all the way there as a complete player like I think I could be, but, you know, I felt like I was continuing to get better in my habits and my convictions didn't waver as the season went along. And but as a team, you know we can do better. We know that we have to focus on the smaller details of the game and of the way we're going about doing things. So it's just something to build upon going into this year.
Darren Waller is joining us. So I mentioned your podcast and the foundation at the very top because of the work that you've done in terms of telling your story and becoming a role model. I want to get into the story in a moment. But overall, why is your story something that you want people to know, that you want to share, and that you want them to draw inspiration from?
I feel like people can connect to my story because I feel like, you know, no matter what our backgrounds or no matter what we find ourselves involved in, the common thing that we as people share is adversity. And, I feel like I've had to overcome a lot of adversity in my life up to this point. And I know that it'll still be the case, going forward in my life. So I would like people to look at my story and say, man, he fell, you know, a ton of times. He messed up so many times, but he still was able to turn his life around and not only live a life that he enjoys, but live a life that is now able to inspire other people. So I want people to think that no matter where they are in life, they're still capable of living a life like that.
So we're talking to Darren Waller. You know, even though you've shared parts of your story in the past, I want to be very respectful because it can be very difficult to talk about for some people. And to fully, truly understand how far you've come, if you were to go back, you grew up outside of Atlanta. What was your life like growing up?
Growing up in Atlanta, it was, you know, it looked great on paper. You know, we were in the suburbs. You know, my parents emerged from rougher environments when they were children to provide a better environment for me and my sister. So I had both my parents and good guidance at home. But, you know, in the community I found myself in, I didn't feel like I fit in from the jump. Like, the first people I made friends with, you know, were white. They weren't my skin color, but that wasn't my choice. Like, they were just people that were outside playing sports, and I liked doing that too. So I used to get made fun of for that. And there's a lot of things that made me feel insecure about who I was. And from a young age, I felt like I had to overcompensate for that. I had to make you approve of me. I had to make you want me. I had to make you like me. And that led me to doing, you know, pretty extreme things and left me feeling, you know, empty inside and having a void that I thought only drugs and alcohol could fill. And in the beginning, I thought I was filling that void. But as time went along, I was only making that void deeper. So growing up for me was just a lot of confusion and a lot of just feeling like I didn't belong or that I wasn't enough.
Darren Waller is joining us. I mean, it's such a candid response. You started drinking when you were 16. You became addicted to painkillers and so on. How much of that was about trying to fit in, about trying to feel accepted? A lot of things that people that age try to deal with. Is that how you were trying to cope?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, drugs and alcohol did two things for me. They allowed me to, one, to numb everything that I was feeling and to avoid those feelings I didn't want to feel. But at the same time, it got me into those friend groups. It got me into those parties. It got me, you know, into those settings where I couldn't get before because I was, you know, kind of a nerd. I was socially awkward. But now they saw that I was, you know, participating in what they were participating in. They were more, you know, willing to invite me to come around. So it was just, you know, like that. So it was like a double-edged sword for me, honestly.
Darren Waller is joining us and talking very candidly. Now, the amazing thing is you're dealing with this and you're having success, though. I mean, you're playing really, really well, and the scholarship offers are coming in. And from the outside, it seems like everything's great. And then you get to the NFL and you're drafted by the Ravens. What was the start of your career like? I mean, was that fun, or did you feel a huge weight still and a huge burden and pressure?
You know, immense weight and pressure. I remember when I got drafted, you know, it was supposed to be like the greatest day of your life, but I could honestly see my demise coming on draft day. And it was just, you know, because I could feel like I didn't have the tools or the mental outlook to be able to handle that kind of pressure. And so, you know, people talk about that rookie wall. I hit that rookie wall in OTAs. You know, I couldn't catch a pass because I was psyching myself out. I was lining up and saying, don't drop this, don't drop this, instead of having confidence in myself saying, you know, nobody can stop me. There's no way I'm not catching everything. Like, I didn't have that mindset. So early on, you know, I feel like my mind was what drove me, you know, deeper into, you know, my downward spiral.
We are talking to Darren Waller. So, Darren, like, where were you with relation to football at that point? I mean, did you even really want to play football at that point?
Absolutely not. It was just like a chore, really. It was the thing that, you know, when I was that young kid that growing up in the South where football is religion, I was like, I know people will accept me if I play football. And I got so caught up in that, making sure that that happened, you know, it took the joy of the game away from me. So when things got tough and things, you know, you had to focus on the mundane things and doing extra, you know, I wasn't about that because all I wanted was the image and I wanted people to approve of me. I wasn't in it for the love of the game. That had been, you know, taken from me, and you know, I kind of pushed that joy away some myself.
We're talking to Darren Waller, and you talk about this in the first episode of your podcast, and you're extremely open about that too. So August 11th, Darren, 2017 is the day you've called the lowest point. What happened that day, and what do you remember about that day?
Yeah, August 11th, 2017. You know, I was getting ready to move out of my apartment in Baltimore because, you know, I had been suspended 2 months prior for a year. And so I was going to go home and move with my parents. And so I was like, oh, I'm going to get high one last time. And you know, got some pills and they weren't what I was expecting. And, you know, I overdosed in my car in a grocery store parking lot, which was, you know, right around the corner from the team practice facility. And, you know, so that was just, you know, a pivotal day for me, a day that finally scared me and shook me enough to think like, all right, yeah, like I'm not really in control like I thought I was. Like I always thought I could get over on you. I always thought I could, you know, pull the wool over people's eyes and that I was okay, like I was making this happen. But, you know, the addiction had me by the throat. I did not have it in control.
All right, so this is Rock Bottom, you OD. Now, the podcast is Comeback Stories. So very clearly, and I laid out all the credentials at the top, you have come back. Now, you might be, in your mind, a work in progress. You could still get better. But in and of itself, it's an amazing comeback. Exactly how were you able to change your personal story? How did you turn this into a comeback story? What was the process? How did you go about doing that?
I think first was removing me from every, you know, commitment or everything that I thought I had to be a part of in my life, like removing me from football, removing me from relationships, removing me from friendships, removing me from activities so I could just be still and focus on myself and healing myself and looking at the wounds that were inside of me that I was still carrying around and not only hurting myself, but hurting other people with. And once I was able to sit there and, you know, go through them and, you know, get them out, have a positive outlet for them, be honest, be open, and, you know, start to feel the healing from that. That was when I was able to, you know, see the vision that, you know, my higher power has for me to, you know, live a life, like I said, of purpose and meaning. Like, okay, like I'm really meant to do great things here. I'm not meant to be like other people. I'm not meant to live an average life. And so once I was able to sift through all those things that I didn't like about myself, I was able to see more of the things that I did like about myself and build upon those going forward.
Amazing. Raiders tight end Darren Waller joining us. Then you took a job at Sprouts and you were stocking shelves. For years, you had been told how awesome you were, how great you were, how special you were. But at this point, you are stocking shelves. What was that experience like?
Wow. Yeah, that was a humbling experience I needed, honestly. It was, you know, it was very interesting. You know, there's a lot of people in there that would like, there would be a few people that recognized me and like wondering why I was working there. And there were people that just saw that I was big and they would be like, why aren't you on the field somewhere? And then I would see like people I went to school with, you know, girls I used to talk to in there. And I would be like in there kind of trying to hide, you know, until like I kind of realized that, you know, I have nothing to be ashamed of here. I'm living life, with the best way I know how and the most honest way I can. And that experience helped me now to be able to handle success better. Like, I don't think I'm, you know, this great thing or that I'm better than other people because I remember the times where, you know, I was passed out in my car. I remember the times where I was stocking the shelf at Sprouts making under $12 an hour. So that experience, you know, really was pivotal as far as, you know, my life taken to another level.
Darren Waller telling a story. You know, it seems to me there's no way you could do something like this by yourself, of course. And you've talked about the role your father, Dorian, played in your life in terms of being a role model and having unconditional love for you. Back in 2019, he told the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, quote, "We've seen the light come back in our son's eyes," end of quote. I mean, to me, that's a beautiful statement. What's it mean to hear your father say that and to have that kind of unconditional love between a father and son?
Yeah, it means a lot to me because, you know, my dad has been there through a lot of things, everything really, and things that the public has seen, you know, things the public hasn't seen. And, you know, his faith in me and what I could, you know, do and become never wavered. He always was speaking positivity into my life, even when, you know, I wasn't trying to hear it or I was stuck on a narrative that was the opposite. And, you know, for him to say that and see that really means that, you know, he sees the work that I've been doing and he respects the work that I've been doing. And, you know, that's the only, as far as approval from people on this earth, you know, he's one of the only few people that I really, you know, lean on their approval.
Hey, listen, you might not want my approval, but I'm going to give you my approval. And I'll tell you why. I think it's amazing that you've done the work, the hard work, and you've turned your life around. And I can imagine where somebody might do something like that and not want to share the details of that work or share that story. And I would respect that. I mean, it's personal. At the same time, this is exactly what you're doing. You have a foundation. You have a podcast. You're now in a position where you can help other people and you are an inspiration. How does it feel to be in that position?
It's honestly crazy to be here just because, you know, I was living a life before that was pretty much the opposite of inspiration. And I was not trying to be, like, I had no plans of being this open about what I had gone through. But, you know, it's just something that I feel like is bigger than me. If it was about serving me, I would be quiet. I would go about my life and not tell anything to people. But I feel like, you know, the greatest joy I can have in this life is, you know, being of service to other people. So I just try to keep them in mind when, you know, I may feel, you know, down or may feel tempted or I may feel, you know, anything, but I know that it's bigger than me. Other people are relying on me. So I take pride in that. And, you know, I don't take their struggle lightly because they're looking at me for inspiration and I want to be able to give that to them.
So, I mean, obviously this is bigger than football, but before I let you go, if I were to bring it back to football, you were named to the Pro Bowl this year. When you consider the road that you've traveled and all the work that you put in both on and off the field, what's it mean to you to reach the Pro Bowl?
It's, you know, it's not like I still can't put into words, you know, I can't really even fully wrap my mind around it still. But it's amazing to, you know, be in that element, to be amongst the best and, you know, just have your work speak for itself. And I just want to continue to maintain that level of consistency for my team and for the fans.
Hey, Derek, do you like mentally, do you still doubt yourself at times? Do you still feel doubt? Do you still fight doubt? And if so, how do you process that?
Yeah, I still go through periods of doubt. I mean, there's, you know, I could have a 200-yard a game, and then, like, that Wednesday at practice, I'm like, all right, now, like, you know, there may be a certain pass or where a certain ball comes that's, like, I'm not still not that confident in, but it's like, you know, I don't necessarily try to, you know, strangle the doubt or run away from the doubt. I just try to let it come in and realize, like, you know, there's no merit to it. I'm just afraid of, you know, I'm not more so afraid of catching that pass. I'm more so afraid of what people are going to think of me. So when I know that, I can remove myself from what people are thinking, and I'm just more free and fluid to play the game. So I still have doubt, but I just like to trace the doubt to the root of it and realize that it usually doesn't have to do with anything in real life. It just has to do with what's going on in my head.
Darren Waller, my guest. So let me finally ask you, if somebody is listening right now and they're dealing with addiction issues or they're feeling trapped and they feel like they have no hope and they don't know what to do, what would you tell that person?
I'd probably ask them a question. I would ask them, you know, who's in your circle, who is your community? Because when you're trying to go about this thing by yourself and keeping everything bottled in and not speaking on it, you know, you're not allowing wisdom to come into your life. You're not allowing, you know, transformation to come into your life. So I would just challenge them to get people around them that they can be honest with, because once you let those things out, let those secrets out, let those dark moments out, you know, there's healing involved in that. There's a weight being lifted off of you. And you can't do that on your own. You know, I was trying to do it on my own at first, and I'm telling you, it doesn't work. So get people around you that are on a similar path, have a like-minded vision for you, and that are invested in you just as a human being. And I promise it'll change for you.
What an absolutely powerful statement and a powerful conversation, and just the one we needed on a day like this. He is the co-host of the Comeback Stories podcast. You want to find that. The founder of the Darren Waller Foundation. He was the 204th pick overall coming out of Georgia Tech. He is a Pro Bowler. Darren, much respect. I really, really appreciate you. I really appreciate your willingness to share that message and that story. I can't imagine how many people that may have helped today. Thank you so much for that, and great to have you on the show, Darren. Really appreciate that.
Yeah, Jim, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. That was great. Darren Waller joining us. Very rarely do you hear somebody who has endured something like that, overcome something like that, but then is willing to share the details of something like that. And I have great respect, admiration, and appreciation for it. Darren Waller of the Raiders. All right, when we come back, still ahead, your phone calls, your tweets. I mean, he is an exceptional talent already, an incredible player already, the Raiders' best player already. I would even say, I mean, literally, Hall of Fame talent. Hall of Fame talent. You know, he's got a long way to go. I'm being very careful when I say that. I'm just saying pure athletic ability, Hall of Fame ability. But how can you not root for somebody like that, who not only went through what he went through, but turned it around, but is that candid about sharing it and that open and that honest? How do you not root for somebody like that? All right, so I enjoyed that very much. Great to have him on, Darren Waller. When we come back, your phone calls and more. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
So wonder how many of you can appreciate how exceptional that conversation was and how unusual that conversation was and how rare that conversation was. Because it's one thing to have a journey like that, but entirely another to be willing to share details of a journey like that and then be able to communicate the details of a journey like that. That is an amazing conversation. I've not had very many conversations like that. Some of you seem to understand it. Taylor Davis tweets, going to go back and watch that interview once a week. One of the coolest stories in sports. Ordering a Raiders number 83 jersey ASAP. So that's really high praise. That guy gets it. At Allegory John tweets, what an exceptionally impressive person. I look forward to watching him and my Chiefs battle it out on the field for years to come. Tons of respect. This will be fun. It's a great tweet. That's a Chiefs fan saying nothing but respect for him. I look forward to seeing our teams battling it out on the field. Chris Ashcraft tweets, that was probably the best interview I've heard on the show. It was a reminder that even professional athletes have their struggles like the average Joe does. Yeah, there's nothing average about those struggles. We're talking about somebody who had a drug addiction, an addiction to painkillers, who was drinking alcohol at 16, and he was so real and so raw, but very matter-of-fact and somewhat conversational about saying what it was like. I grew up, and my friends were white, and I was a nerd, and I didn't fit in, and I wasn't comfortable, and I was awkward, and I was sensitive, and I didn't like the way that felt, and I wanted to do whatever I could to fit in. So as part of that, I turned to alcohol and drugs, and I did that as a way of killing the pain, and I did that as a way of fitting in. And then he became a star athlete and then started to fit in and continued to do those things and never felt comfortable. And then ultimately found himself in a car with an overdose and was able to turn it around, but not before hitting rock bottom and having to do the whole the hard work. That process he laid out, I said, well, how did you come back from all that? How did you get leverage on yourself and your life? He said, well, for one thing, I had to cut off all of those prior relationships, all those people, all those things, all those places, all those situations. I had to start over. And then he worked at Sprouts, and people would come in and they would know who he was. And then the cool kids would come in and the gals that he used to know and date would come in and he would hide. And said, but it was humbling and I needed that. And then rebuilt himself into a Pro Bowler. An amazing story. And then some of you are doing what you do. Hey, Rome, name the Colt right in my face. Why not just name the Colt Larry Brown's crank?
Larry Brown.
You know why, Scott? Because the jockey registry would not allow it. They'd probably, you know what it's
crank,
like?
Crank.
Imagine this. You know how when you try and submit something for a vanity plate with the DMV and you try to get over and get away with something really crass, they know and they don't allow it? The jockey registry is the same way. They've got a million rules. Diane laid out a number of them, but you can't just do things like that. You can't name a horse right in my face. I mean, maybe. Maybe you can get away with
right
that.
Right in my face.
Maybe. Hawk's trying to be cute. Hawk's trying to say, yeah, well, I thought you were going to say that because he's a gelding. He's not a gelding. Not yet. The horse has not been gelded yet. He's still a colt. All right, so next rule. I know a lot of you were coming for Diane because she was explaining some of the rules. You have a colt and you have a gelding. They're not one and the same. They're both males. A colt can reproduce. A gelding has been gelded, neutered. They're no longer able to reproduce. Why is this noteworthy? Because, and I've told you this before, the real money in horse racing is not in racing, it's in breeding. It's in the breeding shed. That's where the real money is. Thank you, Alvin. Some horse porno. The reason we were able to buy shared belief. How was I able to buy into a horse that went on to become the top-ranked thoroughbred in the entire world? How could a horse like that ever be for sale? It's because the horse was a gelding. Meaning, when the horse was done racing, he had no residual value. He would just be a horse. He would just be a pet. Like, we own horses that are retired that are just pets. They're not pets per se, but they're just living their life on a farm because they're awesome animals. But they don't produce income. Colt gelding. So the horse that we are going to name still is a colt. He's not a gelding hawk. But no, that's not why I would not name him right in my face. Again, how am I going to push that through my partner in jungle racing? Janet's not having that. Right in my face. Jimmy, what does that mean?
Right in my face.
You know that famous caller, Toby from Houston, talking about right in my face? Oh, so you want to name our horse right in my face because you're talking about junk.
Right in my face.
Yeah, no. It's not easy to name horses, especially when you have a partner who has to approve. But the good news is I have to approve of her names, and they're not very good either. Noah Vosin would be pretty good. You Killed Marie would be pretty good. Vic and NoCal. A lot of people remember Johnny Damon for his days as a Red Sox or a Yankee, but I'll always view him as a Crown Royal. Well played, Victor. I see what you did there. James Kelly's like, how about Tristan the horse? Yeah, if your name is Tristan, I'm sorry, but yeah, Tristan was not something I was going to name my kid. And Tristan is definitely not something I'm going to name my horse. Especially when I think the horse is going to be a stud. Horse names are different. Like, if you know it's going to be a good horse, you want a strong name. This is why the father of this horse is named Straight Fire. I knew that horse was going to be a badass. I knew that horse was going to be fast. We thought that horse may have Kentucky Derby aspirations. That's why I was holding on to that name, Straight Fire. I was waiting for the right horse. One more lesson in naming horses. Remember, we had a horse in partnership named Ms. Direction. And Ms. Direction was spelled M-I-Z-D-I-R-E-C-T-I-O-N. And when it became known, when that horse became famous, I remember, I think it was Deadspin, that took a run at me for naming the horse Ms. Direction with a Z. And at the time I said, all right, number one, I mean, cool, it's fine. But number one, I didn't name the horse. I bought into a horse that already had been named. I had nothing to do with the name of the horse. But the reason the people who named that horse Ms. Direction named the horse Ms. Direction was because the sire was mizzenmast. That's how you name horses, after the sire. So, the sire of this horse, the father, is Straight Fire. So if we want to have a playoff, that we can. A playoff Straight Fire. Think about that. Or just keep naming it off something relating to junk. Try that too. 1-800-636-8686. All right, when we come back. If you've got a name for the horse, I'll take it. If you want to show up with an ATP, I will take that. Ask the pros. Always Week the Was is coming up. If you're looking for something to do over the weekend, take a spin on episode 163 of the Jim Rome Podcast. Kenny Anderson, hoops legend. Well, buddy of mine from back in the day. Kenny Anderson and I chop it up and get caught up. Look for that on the podcast, and we will come right back. Time now for a sports update. Here you go. ATP brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices, excellent customer service. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better prices every day. Okay, Rome, do you ever take the family up to Big Bear for vacations? If so, do you prefer summer or winter up there? Pete in Elko, good question. You know, we love the mountains. Love the mountains. That's how we ended up in Montana for the better part of a decade. We actually like it in the summertime better than the wintertime. Janet and I went to Big Bear way back in the day. Big Bear is great. Love Big Bear. Love Arrowhead. We actually were more about the desert. We had a house in the desert, a couple of houses in the desert for a couple of years. But to answer the question, we love the mountains, but we are more summer people than winter people, which is why we go to Eagle River, Wisconsin, northern Wisconsin in the summertime as opposed to the wintertime. Jumpman, do you have to pay royalties for your intro, outro drops like Iggy Pop, Guns N' Roses? Thanks, Mike in Green Bay. Yeah, back in the day, we had a little issue with Axl. Axl wanted his dough, and he got it. Yes, nothing is free. Jimmo's, is there something that Logan really wants, but you refuse to buy him? Brent and PC, you know what? The kids are good like that. No, they don't ask for anything. Strangely, believe it or not, not shiny things, not things of monetary value. They want things like time with their video games and their devices, but they're not asking for new devices or video games. Like, I'm one of those guys that if my cell phone has a scratch, I want a new one. Logan's one of those kids that if my car ran over his cell phone and shattered it, he'd still rock it and wouldn't care and wouldn't ask for a new one. Now, I will say this. He loses crap, which drives me crazy. But he won't ask for a new one. Jimmo's, can you think of a word that no matter how many times you thumb it out, you always misspell? You know what's always been kind of a hard word for me to spell, believe it or not? Belichick. And I spell pretty well. Like, I'm a wordsmith. I'm good with my words. I can use my words and spell well. But Belichick is not the easiest word to spell. Senor Rome, when you were on the gin, what kind did you go with? If I go for it, it's usually Bombay or Hendrix. Schaefer in Buffalo. You know, it was a scale. There was an evolution. I started with Beefeater. I had no idea that it was crap. I thought it was cool. I thought it was old school. And then I told the famous story, and I'll skip the story. And then I jumped ahead to Bombay Sapphire, and I could not believe how smooth that was compared to the Beefeater, and did that for years. And then when that started to burn a hole in my gut, I went to Hendrix because that was smoother. And I went from Hendrix to Nolet's. And then I went from Nolet's to the Goose. And then I went from the Goose to the tequila. And then I went from the tequila to the scotch. And that's where I am right now, with an occasional glass of Pinot, because I'm sophisticated like that. In and around that, Hawk tried to recruit me to IPA Nation, which I'm a Heineken guy. IPA Nation did not really agree with me either. Yeah, I don't do much beer anymore, honestly. Once in a while, okay, for instance, we have a horse race on Saturday. The race is short. I want to enjoy the race. I'll go Heineken for the race. I won't go scotch for the race because the race is short. But I'm not drinking a lot of beer anymore. Let's go to Alvy's week that was. Be kind. Rewind. Welcome to the jungle. A tremendous Monday to you. What's cracking? Hope you had a great weekend. My name is Jim Rome.
Probably wondering, what do you got for us today, Rome?
Got a lot of show.
Good show, dude.
Really good show.
Really?
Did you really think that on this Monday, I would start with some MMA? If you have slept on Kamaru Usman, that's on you, not on him. Usman is running on some premium fuel and looking for the next thing. Jorge Masvidal.
I'm going to put him in a coffin this time.
Dana. I will even spring for the coffin.
He don't want that fight.
It's a good coffin to run you these days.
Email.
Two laptops. Who are you? Me? Signed Derek Jeter. You know why I've got two? One of them doesn't work. One took a big dump in his pants. Where is that game there? Jordan Palmer.
The top movers in the league, meaning the guys who move the most efficiently. No wasted movement. The two best movers in the league are Kyler Murray and Tom Brady. And how ironic is that?
And you really had nothing to do with it. Everybody loved it. Nobody's mad except you. And now you're losing sleep and embarrassing yourself over the corn dog of sports trophies. Not worth it.
It's not worth it.
Clark Lee.
Listen, it's always been a dream of mine to be on the jungle.
Jungle was rocking.
I couldn't be more excited about this.
And he's limping.
AD, what's good, baby?
Good news is your season is not over. Bad news, it got way more challenging. Dan Culbert.
This could actually be good for him. After that short turnaround from the bubble, he can come back and look even better than he did to start the season.
Four wells requesting a COVID test rectally.
Wow, Johnny, even for you, that call sucked.
Wrecked him.
Damn near killed him. What about that call?
I want to do this on
JJ.
Video.
JJ! Be a part of America's team. Go to Cleveland. Let's go out and win this whole damn thing together.
What's so good about Cleveland?
Their team, their chemistry, their talent, their culture, their coaching staff, DeForest Buckner. Do you actually like doing the workout?
I like what they do for me.
I must have to be on a beach sipping a margarita or something, but those are the things that you got to do.
I'm going to go ahead and throw back this Caesar salad. Take me a nice fat.
But man, that is some really raw, graphic commentary. I need more. Marshawn Lynch, if you need him.
I'm just about that action, boss.
Talking to Michael McCown.
The ride's worth it. The journey's worth it. I mean, I've had my teeth kicked in and my face pushed in the mud. Just crazy.
You don't have an inalienable right to be on this show. You're probably on hold right now going, dang, he is lighting those fools up, but I know he's not talking about me. Well, I'm talking about you. Argel, you're in the clear.
Pronounced Argel, it's French.
Eric Musselman.
JR, great talking with you. Thanks for having me in the jungle. Hey, we got to set a date, man. Got to go to Pacific Beach, grab a burrito, and watch the Padres sometime this summer.
We were looking for Jimmy Butler.
Woof. I can't do my guy Jimmy B like that.
Oh, that's Johnny's girlfriend. She's about to learn that not everything is bigger in Texas.
Nice production value, though, Russ. William Mack III is joining us. You were sleeping in your car and using borrowed clubs.
It was a struggle at that time, lowest in my career, so just always remember what my dad sacrificed to get me to where I am. I never gave up.
Beef jerky segment.
Anyone that whines and cries about not seeing Bruno Mars is a bitch.
Hello, my beef is talk show host who hang up on nice guys named Wayne, not Todd.
My beef is with grown men that wear pajamas in public.
Why do I have to cut a stick of butter in half, melt it, and pour it over the popcorn? I shouldn't have to do that.
The fact alone, any two-legged man.
Peter DeBoer is my guest. What about Saturday? It's going to be outdoors at Lake Tahoe.
You know, everybody reverts back to childhood memories and nostalgia when we play outdoors. And that's how everybody grew up.
Hey, Rome, they wanted to syndicate me, not you. But I didn't want to do it. I'm the reason you are you. You're welcome, Van Smack. Scoreboard, I win. You lose. San Diego.
Emailed.
Why don't you explain to them how damn difficult it was to watch a good porno on dial-up internet? The younger generations today do not know how easy they have it.
Thanks, Jim. I appreciate it.
Appreciate you, Taylor. Great job.
St. Louis Battlehawks.
Rit. Do not do that.
Uh-oh.
I swear to God, if you do that again, you're fired.
I apologize. This one was all on me. That being said.
Dude, don't you wreck an apology with a that being said.
Ridiculous, right?
I don't know how he got that to go. Hello, Diane. Nice to have you, Diane. How are you?
Hi, Jim. How are you?
War Lady Clone.
Oh, my God. Go ahead, Diane.
You're cheaper than therapy and actually better.
Jesus Christ.
I so badly want to name that horse Noah Vosen.
Noah Vosen.
Talking to Darren Waller.
So I was like, oh, I'm going to get high one last time. Got some pills, and they weren't what I was expecting, and overdosed in my car in the grocery store parking lot, which was right around the corner from the team practice facility. The addiction had me by the throat. I did not have it in control.
Lighten up, Francis.
Would that cost you to join? $500?
It's a dynasty clone.
Knock it off. You knock it off, QB1.
Jim, appreciate you so much. Thank you.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ, Jackson.
Oh, me, oh my.
200 on a 50-yard field like was a
literally.
Good night now.
That was such an amazing week. I'm not sure what my favorite thing from the week was, but it's always great to have Alvin recap it. You forget how much goes down in any given week on this show until Alvin dials it all into a five-minute recap. Marshawn Lynch getting on a broadcast and saying, I'm going to throw back this Caesar salad, then take me a nice big fat bleep, and then go run for 200 on a 50-yard field is pretty amazing.
Your field like was in.
That's right near the top of the list for sure. What a great day today. Darren Waller, I hope you heard that interview. That was an amazing interview. We also had Jalen Green back in hour number one, which was great. He is a 19-year-old guard for the NBA G League Ignite. Brian Shaw, famous gaucho, was the head coach of the Ignite. I didn't get to it. I really want to. I'm proud of the conversation. So if there's something you're looking to do this weekend, episode 163 of the Jim Rohn Podcast with Kenny Anderson. We talked about a number of things, including what it was like to grow up in Queens and be a legend on the playgrounds. And I got his thoughts on Ron Artest, Meta, and whether or not that's an urban legend or did a guy really get stabbed to death with a table leg in a game. And Kenny talks about that. and says there are other things that would happen in those runs. So look for that conversation, episode 163 with Kenny Anderson of the Jim Rohn Podcast. My thanks to the aforementioned guests, Darren Waller, Jalen Green, the XR4TI, Rit, accept my apologies for airing you out yesterday.
Finally.
Hawk, your apology was pathetic. Unacceptable. You made it worse, not better. Alvin, thank you very much for working today.
Dude.
My thanks to the entire XR4TI crew, including the big head James Kelly, D-Dubs, the Bookers, and you clones. Have an amazing weekend, and I will see you Monday. Good night now.